Let me set this up for you. So for those of you who don't know, and I hate that it sounds egotistical for me to bring up my previous work, but I've done some videos on Islam up on YouTube, or you can go to louderwithcrowder.com and see these, where really I just take quotes from the actual Quran or the Hadith from Muhammad's life or I guess historical accounts, the canonized texts, and used them and said, listen, what do you folks think about this? Issued the Quran challenge, where I challenge people to read 5 pages in any direction, anywhere in the Quran, and tell me if their opinion has changed. Listen, my assertion is that it is a book of power, of violence, and of hatred as compared to the New Testament, where it was kind of about loving and being good to your neighbor, with the exception of Jesus kind of going a little bit crazy in the temple. But that was well-warranted. That was well-warranted. It was merited. So there's this Islamic nonprofit called Talk Islam. By the way, very effective with online mujahideen, I guess, jihadi tactics, where they flood any page that's negative about Islam. You need to know this online. If ever you say anything that's remotely critical about Islam, you will be flooded by armies of online Islamists downvoting your videos, trying to get it removed from as hate speech. I've had to go to YouTube several times and say, listen, this video is not hate speech. It's directly quoting the Quran. So there's a video up now from talkislam.org with a character who is trying to rebut all of my arguments I made, taking quotes directly from the Quran. And he really thinks he's gotten the better of all, I guess, people critical of Islam through me. So we're going to bring on actually somebody who helps me source a lot of these videos, a very educated man, a guy who actually teaches these courses at churches as it relates to Christian apologetics and Muslim apologetics across the country, Gerald Morgan. Gerald, thanks for coming back.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it.
Yes, we are grateful to have – last time you were in studio, so now we're doing this via phone, which hopefully doesn't make it too much harder. And I know you're on Central Time, so you're probably pretty groggy.
Yeah, you know, woke up about 6-7 minutes ago, but I'm good.
Well, hopefully you have some caffeine in you, because we need you to help us with this. So, fun dip, we're going to roll some clips here. We're going to roll some clips from this video, and we're going to dissect it for you, the listener. So listen, you don't have to watch the whole video yourself. We're going to rebut the common Islamic arguments defending the faith. Fun dip, run clip one, please.
Jesus versus Muhammad. Peace be upon them both. Because both of them are prophets of Islam, and for that reason, I will respect both, because they were the best of men to walk this earth.
So that's the first quote we have from this gentleman, by the way, who was very offended at me for being pro-Jesus and not necessarily pro-Muhammad. That's the setup. That's the premise. Both men, the best men to walk the face of this earth. Gerald, do you agree with that?
No. No, and I have respect for people of every faith, except for this one specifically, because we found a guy here in Muhammad who's really going out and lying to people, and he's one of the most nefarious characters in history. And I'm not trying to dog him because I disagree with the ideology. There's a lot of things that
right.
I disagree with in life, but I'm really going after him because you cannot compare the sinless life of Jesus Christ to somebody who told his followers to kill Jews, to somebody who told his followers to go out and commit these atrocities if people don't convert. There's just absolutely no way that you can make that comparison. Not with a straight face.
No,
maybe with his accent.
Right.
I think the accent gives him the
Yeah, it's so well, this guy, I guess, when he's kind of like a walking Sacher Baron Cohen character. I'm not quite sure how to handle him. But no, that's great to set up the premise here. Again, secular argument. This isn't even an argument from a Christian perspective.
Yeah.
If you don't believe Jesus is who he said he is, nor Muhammad, let's just compare their lives historically. But we're going to go on to the next point. We've got to roll through this. Fun dip. Roll clip two, please.
In regards to your first allegation of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, marrying a minor, all I can say is that Islam is the only religion to actually prohibit the marriage of minors who have not reached the age of puberty. The truth is, in different times, in different places, in different contexts, the age for marriage varies.
Let's leave it at that with a question. Now, of course, this was in response to me talking about the fact that Muhammad, for those of you who don't know, married a 6-year-old chick named Aisha. To be fair, he may be consummated when she was 9, also hit her. We'll get to that later. Here's the thing, Gerald.
Yeah.
He doesn't really rebut anything. He just tries to blur historical contexts.
No, actually, he goes one step further than that, and he admits that even in the Quran, it says not to marry a minor. I don't know if maybe Muhammad wasn't, you know, paying attention when he wrote that, but he turned around and did just that and married a 6-year-old. And Stephen, I mean, there's a word, and maybe I shouldn't use it on the air, but there's a word that we have for people of our age group. And we would call somebody who marries a six-year-old today a pedophile. That's exactly what that person would be called.
Well, hold on, Gerald. They would have been called a pedophile back then. It's not one of those things. It's like, listen, people got married at 13, 14, which is why it was also easier for people to wait to have sex until marriage. Now people are going through their second adolescence, getting married at 35. But even back then, 6 years old, even nine, if that's when he consummated, that's before girls even get their monthly cycle. That's before girls become women. That would have been a pedophile back then. So again, we're going to go to the next clip here real quick, but he doesn't even rebut that, just tries to blur those lines. Let's go on to his next argument. Fun Dip, clip three, please.
Since this is Jesus versus Muhammad, let's compare it to the context of Jesus. With none other than the best of women to have walked this earth, Mary, the mother of Jesus. She got married to Joseph, who was 90 years old when she was only 12 years old.
Okay. I've searched for this high and low, Gerald, and I can only find very small fringe websites, usually pro-Islamic websites, that use that argument. Is there any kind of historical backing that Joseph was 90 years old?
No, there's no legitimate backing. In fact, there's a lot of things that really make this impossible, right? He's kind of termed as the carpenter's son, and that's how he was making his living. How many 90-year-old carpenters do you know that are out there running around and making a living? Or how about making a trek down to Egypt, right? You know, when Jesus was born, they had to get out of the land for a little while. Oh, right. Okay, but maybe when Jesus was 12 and he was 102 years old running around the temple trying to find Jesus. I mean, they must have had a great healthcare system back then, because we can't even do that today.
Yeah. Well, they did. The thing is, they had a better rollout to their healthcare back then.
Yeah. They had better websites, I think.
Yeah, exactly. They had a better website. Really, it was just a sundial where they sacrificed a few goats. But it's funny that this guy says he's 90 years old. And like you said, I guess if you're, you know, Clint Eastwood, Gran Torino, maybe at 90, you can get a few kids off of your lawn.
Sylvester Stallone, you just never age, I guess, maybe. That's what happens.
Right. Now, I guess he's sort of extrapolating from the fact, and you've talked about this before, that Joseph is portrayed in some Christian works of art. It didn't really take place until after the 4th century. He was maybe portrayed a little older.
Yeah, and it was in kind of a misguided attempt. They didn't want people to associate Joseph as being the biological father of Jesus. Not because he was and they were trying to cover it up. It was just because they were trying to kind of put a point on the divinity of Christ.
Right.
And so they started to kind of portray him as this older man so it wouldn't look like he was legitimately the father of Jesus. So it was a misguided attempt. And again, there's been plenty of those in the church.
It's not like Mary was a perpetual virgin her whole life, right?
No, she had more children, which again, kudos to Joseph. If he was 90 some odd years old, popping out six more kids or five more kids, that's pretty impressive in my book.
Yeah, that was before Cialis, I guess, but he must have had it going on. Yeah. All right, we're going to go on here to the next clip. We'll roll through these. So the next clip, if you can run it, Fun Dip, please.
Another thing you mentioned, jihad. And as much as you say that the Bible doesn't have verses on jihad...
After church today, pull out your Bible and look up Psalm 137, and you'll see that our own text has passages that can make us uncomfortable.
And Islam teaches jihad too, and we don't shy away from it.
Okay, so jihad is a word that gets people pretty uncomfortable, right, Gerald?
Yeah.
And again, he doesn't seem to deny anything that's been said in any of my videos or anything that I guess critics would say. He just tries to blur historical context. That's what you're seeing here, saying, well, it's kind of like liberals with Barack Obama. George Bush did it worse. It's the same thing. Muslims go, well, Christians did it too. Tell us about jihad, and is there anywhere that Christians could interpret something like that from their texts?
No, and that's, I guess, the big point for me, is that, yes, there are accounts of historical violence in the Bible and in the Quran, right? That's not what we're talking about here. And let me just really quick, Psalm 137 is absolutely 100% not talking about jihad. It's talking about a people who have been taken captive by the Babylonians, saying, God, when are you going to judge these people for all the atrocities they've done for us? Okay, so first of all, that's fine. The second is, jihad is a struggle, right?
Right.
I don't know why, but for some reason...
By the way, reading the Quran is a struggle. Have you ever slogged through that fiction? Oh my gosh, it makes Twilight look brilliant. Gerald, we're going to bring you on after the break. It's so thorough, we appreciate it. So folks, stick around. We're going to finish dissecting the Islamic apologist arguments louder with Crowder. Don't change the dial. So, Gerald Morgan, thank you so much for staying with us.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks.
Okay, so we were talking about before you left the jihad quote, which we did. We'll run this on ladderwithcredo.com, where this gentleman says that jihad can be found in Christian, in you know, the Old Testament text, that it can be really interpreted that way in any religion. You say no. Why?
I say no because the entire Bible, the message is a God who lovingly pursues you, right? And then basically at the very end says, look, one day you're going to be accountable for the decision that you make. But until that day, I'm going to do everything that I can to show you who I am and to show you that I love you.
Right.
That message is not in Islam, the religion of peace, quote unquote, right? It's definitely not there. Basically, it says either you convert right here, right now by some verbal thing, which has nothing to do with your heart if you've got a sword on the back of
exactly.
your neck, and you've got to convert or die, right? That,
right.
That's the message of jihad, die or convert.
Exactly, and that's where you go into if you don't convert, or die, there's the dimitude, there's Sharia law, where,
right.
I mean, you want to talk about people feeling like second-class citizens here in the United States because maybe they're in some kind of a minority group. Try being non-Muslim in any Muslim country. If you're still alive, by the way, it usually doesn't make it to dimitude and putting you in a role that is submissive to Muslims in society. Usually you're just, you're just decapitated. But that's a great point. Really, it's the overarching message of whether, again, whether you're a Christian or not. Even if you're an atheist, you have to appreciate the concept of a God that's about love, the concept that's a God about forgiveness, or at least it's part of the concept, and a God that's about power and killing.
Big
difference.
It freaks me out. Yeah, it's a huge difference.
Well, and we're going to run the last clip here, and then we can kind of just sort of wrap it all up. A fun dip, Dan, if you could run the last clip from Talk Islam, please.
And Islam even made responsibility on everyone participating in war. You do not hurt the trees. You do not hurt the elderly, the children, the women. Where are your ethics of war like we have ethics of war?
I have two words for you. Predator drones.
I don't know what the Obama thing came in there at the end of that. That was a weird transition.
Predator drones. Yeah. Everybody kind of giggled. I have to say, though, I love that he started out with not hurting the trees. I
mean, right.
That's fantastic.
Who is he, James Cameron?
Keep the trees in good shape.
Yeah, he's gonna be an Avatar too. But I find so ethics of war. So obviously trees we're talking about, animals we're talking about. I guess not reporters. Are they? Are they?
No. Mm-hmm. No, apparently not. And here's the thing. All of those things that he listed would be great if anyone actually adhered to them in war, right? So this is a great list to throw out there. But unfortunately, if it's just a list, it doesn't do anybody any good because, there's tons of human shields that have been used. I mean, recently with Gaza, that's been one of the claims that we've had to deal with. And their treatment of women as human shields as well.
Right.
I don't understand where. And this one, if it wasn't so sad, almost made me laugh. He said that Islam has ethics of war. With everything that we see going on right now in Islam and all the wars that have been going on in the Middle East forever, where are the ethics? I have no idea what he's talking about.
No, it is. It's laughable. Almost as laughable as, by the way, as this gentleman's beard. I feel bad for him because I know it's big in those cultures, and the guy just can't grow one. It's got to be a tough gig for a guy like that to not be able to grow a beard and work for Talk Islam. I mean, here's the thing. If we're talking about if it's actually really in practiced, long before any Americans got involved, or even if you want to talk about Israel, Hamas, there are far more, Islamic groups. I mean, you look at Syria killing other Muslims. That happens all over the world. And really, if it was, we don't want to hurt the trees, we don't want to hurt any person, those are the ethics of war. If I'm a Muslim or even a Christian in Syria, I say, hey, I just go sit next to a tree. That's what I do.
Which are hard to find in very arid places.
It is.
Maybe that's why.
That's probably why Jesus got so mad at the fig tree. When he was over there in that area of the world, because there weren't
the one fig tree I've gotten, it doesn't do anything.
Right. That's the one thing Jesus seemed like he got a little bit too mad. Oh man, you never bear fruit again. The apostles are sitting there going, hey, Jesus, we can calm down. There's just some figs. We can go down to the temple and buy you some figs. They're selling figs at the temple.
And then, everybody's running. Doves are flying. Lambs are ewing.
Right, exactly. This is one of those things. So here's again, Gerald, the most important thing I think the takeaway here is this is a guy who, I guess by all measurable barometers, or at least he claims to, or at least Talk Islam thinks this guy is qualified enough to do so. has the credentials to defend Islam. This is the guy who's come out, a video that's been watched, I think, almost a million times. And yet I've never really seen any kind of counter arguments to the arguments that I put forth in the video. And by the way, my arguments aren't unique. It's the same arguments that people have put forward against the Quran and Muhammad and Islam for years. And the best it seems as though he has, correct me if I'm wrong, is, well, Christians do it too. And here's a verse sort of blurring the historical context.
Absolutely. No, he doesn't address any of the issues. I mean, really, this guy should be a left-leaning Democrat. He's perfect for the role. He just says, no, wait a minute. Look over here. Don't look at the fact that it's in our book not to do this, and Muhammad did this. Don't worry about that, but look over here and look at this, where maybe you guys have done something bad in the past.
Right, exactly.
And it just doesn't make any sense.
Good call with a left-wing Democrat. Way to tie it back into politics. I can see Fundip
I'm bringing
here.
It back, my friend.
Fundip is giving you a slow clap right now. He's standing up like
Outstanding.
Billy.
Outstanding.